This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're coming up to 7:36 in the morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wang Xiaoning and Tan Chen Li. But we're turning our attention now to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. It's been 56 days since Russia launched a full-scale invasion into Ukraine on 24th February. Now, instead of flexing military might as a counterattack to aid Ukraine, many countries have imposed an unprecedented set of coordinated sanctions against Russia.
While the breadth and severity of these sanctions vary greatly, they include the removal of some Russian banks from SWIFT financial messaging system, freezing of assets of Russian oligarchs, and the import ban of certain Russian goods, to name a few. And correspondingly, many companies are also pulled their investments and businesses from the Russian market.
Now, new rounds of sanctions are being introduced, but President Putin does not seem to be willing to retreat and has said that peace talks with Ukraine were at a dead end. In retaliation, Russia has imposed sanctions, with an export ban on a string of products until the end of the year. But of course, the question is, how effective are these sanctions imposed on Russia? And also, what is the impact of the counter-sanctions deployed by Russia now?
So for a better understanding of how these sanctions are taking effect, we speak to Raffaello Pantucci, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore. Raffaello, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, since the start of war in Ukraine, we have seen sanctions of various forms being imposed on Russia. We've also seen many international companies leaving the Russian market en masse. But that hasn't really had much effect on Vladimir Putin's decision-making when it comes to the war. Are the sanctions not severe enough, or do sanctions simply take time to take effect?
Good morning. But I think, frankly, it's probably a bit of both. I think certainly sanctions are not necessarily a tool that you expect an immediate reaction from. And, you know, in some ways, what we've seen in terms of the exodus of companies from Russia is an interesting immediate reaction that we don't usually see in such size and volume. So, you know, I think that that's certainly part of the issue. These are tools which take some time to take effect for people to feel and for the public to be angry enough about and the country to suffer enough from that they actually decide to react to them. On the other side of the coin, it is also the case, I think, that pro-President Putin had assumed a certain level of sanctions were going to hit him when he went in. And so to some degree, it was priced into his thinking, probably. Last time he did this, or every other time he's done this, when we think about events in 2014, when he took Crimea and then first sent forces into Luhansk and Donetsk, the sort of eastern parts of Ukraine, the West imposed heavy sanctions after that as well. And he seemed to be able to weather them. So I think to some degree, it's a calculation. These are not tools with a rapid return. And then on the other hand, there's probably a bit of preparation had already gone in on the Russian side to expecting some level of sanctions. I don't think they were quite expecting the height, the volume that has been imposed, but I think they're expecting something.
So President Putin said on Monday that the strategy of the economic blitz has failed and instead led to a deterioration of the economy in the West. So did the sanctions backfire in your point of view?
No, I don't think so. I think that's clearly rhetoric you would say. He's putting on a good face. I think there is going to be undeniable damage to the Russian economy going forwards. And I think it's going to be very difficult for them to entirely recover from this. I think you're already seeing some levels of damage, and I think it will get much deeper, frankly, and it will take a while for companies to sort of fail and all of the real economic problems to come out. So I think it's a bit of bluster at his end. He can't say that these things are working, because if he does that, then it shows he's losing and this is not a success. And that's certainly not what he wants to say.
And he has, of course, also fought back, President Putin. I mean, he has imposed sanctions on Western countries by imposing export bans on a string of products until the end of this year. What impact do these counter-sanctions actually cause?
As far as I can tell, they've been pretty negligible in terms of what their effect actually is. I think Western countries are a lot less dependent on the things that he's decided to sort of sanction against. I think the key issue really is energy, of which he sells a lot. Russia sells a lot of energy to the West. And this is energy and other raw materials, frankly, that are bought by the West from Russia, because Russia is a very mineral-rich country. But if he sanctions, then he's going to lose out as much as the West is, because he needs the income as much as the West actually needs the various minerals that he's selling. So if he was to impose sanctions on those, then those counter-sanctions would probably have an effect. But the ones he's imposed at the moment are frankly sort of an attempt to show that Russia is doing something as well, a sort of attempted tit-for-tat with actually no real impact.
I think one of the key sectors of cooperation that Russia has with other countries, particularly in Europe, is the export of gas. So Russia exports 40% of gas to Europe, and it has suspended gas supplies on previous occasions, but they haven't turned off the gas pipes at this time. I guess what's going into that decision there? Will we see them turn off the pipes at some point if they decide they've been pushed too far?
Well, I mean, the problem is if the Russians turn off the gas, then what are they going to do with this? And ultimately, you know, gas is not a commodity that is that easy to just sort of shift in a new direction. You need to build infrastructure to do that. And well, there's some infrastructure to sell to other countries. That's mostly China, and there's a limit probably to how much they want to purchase. And there's also probably, you know, and only if they to suddenly shift 40% of your the gas that you're shifting from one direction to another is not something you can do very easily. And the drop in income that that would mean for Russia would be massive at a time when he is getting hit with very heavy economic censure in every other direction. So I think it's a tool that the Russians could attempt to use, and they have in the past, but it's one that ultimately they will suffer from as much as the Western countries. And frankly, for Western countries to get gas from other places, there are lots of options on the table, and they're already exploring this. If we think of Qatar, parts of the Middle East, or parts even of the United States, or even of North Seas, where there are sort of other reserves that the Europeans could tap. So it's a tool that in some ways would be incredibly damaging and have a huge effect, but it would probably have a huge effect on him as well and lead to a huge shrinking of sort of Kremlin's coffers.
Raffaello, I'm wondering how much can other countries that are neutral or friendly to Russia cushion the impact of all these sanctions? I know you mentioned China, and you say that there's limited capacity on China's side to take any of the excess gas that Russia exports. But there are other countries as well. There's India, Brazil, South Africa. All these countries are neutral or friendly to Russia. So could they still provide a window for Russia to operate economically, even as Western countries impose all these harsh sanctions?
Well, certainly they offer alternatives, but I mean, you have to remember that in sort of sheer income terms, the European market is huge as compared to a lot of the other markets that Russia's talking about. So in sheer sort of economic displacement terms, the European market is one that's probably irreplaceable from a Russian perspective, even if the Chinese were to sort of step in and fill that gap. And the other side to that coin is, of course, all of these other countries, they're supportive of Russia at sort of a rhetorical level and at a practical level to some degree, but they've got no interest in just sort of, you know, switching their economies over in this direction and be entirely reliant on Russia as well. They would undoubtedly bargain in their positions, and China would as well. And China's sort of the most obvious economic actor to step in. And then the danger is that if we see some of these sanctions that have been imposed on Russia, you know, the West starts to decide to say, well, we're going to impose secondary sanctions as well. So let's say there's a company that is, you know, bypassed, that is doing economic activity with Russia, which is quite specifically intended to bypass the sanctions. Well, the West could slap sanctions on them too, saying, well, you're breaching the very sanctions we're trying to impose on Russia, and therefore you're in breach of those as well, and so therefore we sanction you too. And that will have a negative effect on them. And actually what we've seen with Chinese companies in particular is that they're very reticent to step in and fill the gap in Russia, because they're very concerned that they might find themselves getting cut off of the very lucrative US and European markets, and that would be hugely damaging to them. So it's not just really a case that, you know, Russia can just turn to these other countries and say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't really matter, we can just work with these people instead. A, the economies are just nowhere near the same size and nowhere near the same wealth. And B, they don't necessarily need exactly the same things. And so Russia is still stuck in a situation where it maybe has a product that it wants to sell, but the people it can now sell it to either don't want it because they're fearful of this sort of secondary sanctions impact, or they don't need it to the same volumes that the Europeans are purchasing it.
Raffaello, I want to shift the conversation with regards to sanctions to the financial markets. How does this complicate Russia's payment of foreign debts?
I think it makes it much more complicated for Russia to service its debt. But at the moment, I think the biggest problem that Russia has is that, you know, you've got the United States, which is essentially trying to cut it out from from the dollar markets. And this is, you know, the US dollar is the major currency that's used in, I think it's 80 or 90% of sort of all energy transactions around the world. And if the Russians are no longer able to use US dollars to those volumes because US banks won't do correspondent deals with them, then this does suddenly put them in a very difficult position about how to sort of transact with the international economy. And this is the full intention of the sanctions, by the way. The whole aim is to cut Russia out and to make Russia suffer to the point that Russia does decide to change its behavior. So that is the intention of it. The intention is to be very damaging and very difficult to Russia. And Moscow is trying to put a brave face on it and push through it. And probably for a few months, it will be able to do that. But at some point, this will all come to bite. And it will become very difficult for Russia to continue to transact. On energy alone, they've said from now on, they want to start doing transactions in rubles instead. They're going to struggle, frankly, to get any Western companies to come up with that volume of rubles or to want to transact in the Russian currency rather than continue to use the international currency, the US dollar or even the euro that people use in a lot of energy transactions in particular.
Raffaello, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Raffaello Pantucci, senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies, talking to us about the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia, the counter-sanctions that Russia themselves have imposed on other countries, and whether these are of any effect in practice.
Yeah, I think when you look at the reasons for sanctions, right, one, of course, to somewhat cause economic distress to the Russian economy and in turn maybe change the mind of President Putin. But I think longer term, what I think they want to do is to create an environment of regime change, right? But the issue here is, does it really work? And we can only look to history, like Iraq in the 1990s, and it didn't work. In Venezuela, it also still doesn't work. What happens is that the society pays an extreme price for this. And it's because society is also weakened by all the sanctions. It doesn't necessarily push its people towards wanting that regime change.
I mean, you can also look at examples like in Iran and in Cuba, where there have been sanctioned regimes for like decades. And that hasn't seen any change in leadership. Ultimately, in Russia especially, President Putin does have a very loyal nationalist following. And I don't see how these sanctions can have the effect of regime change if that's what they want to do. We don't know. But again, as Raffaello mentioned, sometimes sanctions do take time to manifest in its full form. So whether later on when economic sanctions start to bite even further, whether that will lead the leadership to make changes, I don't know. But we've seen wars drag on for 3-4 years. I'm not sure that this one's going to be any different.
Yeah, and you're right that the society is the one who pays for this, because I was reading this article in the BBC that talks about on the ground how Russians are coping with the pullout of brands. So there was like a fight for the last iPhones and last chance for foreign bliss and the closure of certain news portal or media closures, and they were doing a farewell last broadcast. So it's all very sentimental in a way.
Well, stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.